Final minute 35 of regulation. 6-on-5 for Vegas. Quick stick score! Pacioretty! From the inner rim of the left circle, it's a tie game with 91 seconds to go. Eric Howland, up in the bottom of the third for the Knights. Played high school hockey here, played college hockey here, and pro hockey here. Now he can win it for the Knights. He shoots, he scores! Dubnyk got a piece, but he couldn't stop it. Eric Howland wins it for Vegas in a shootout. 2-1 Golden Knights.
Sunday morning, Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM and 1340 AM, flagship station of the reigning 2018 Western Conference champion, expansion Vegas Golden Knight. That's a mouthful. We are streaming on the LV Sports Network, and we can be seen on Facebook Live right now. Check us out if you are listening for the first time. This is Out of Line, and we are here every Sunday morning from 8 to 9. I'm Brian Feldman. Directly in front of me, producer and Lotus Broadcasting sports radio personality, Chris Magnum Chapman, is here as always. And, of course, you can hear Chris all over Vegas Golden Knights Radio right here on Fox Sports Radio. He is in the locker room hitting with me half the time after the games, man. Does a great job. Also, Jose Valonte, who now has his own sports talk show called Sudden Death on a station just up the dial. It's every Thursday night at 8 o'clock. You want to check that out. Jose is here. And to my left on your radio dial. And, hey, we've got some great guests here. Jose is going to fill you in on that in a minute. And, you know, we're going to be talking Rebel football. We got to talk a little bit about UFC 229. I mean, I can't leave that one out. I almost did. The Vegas Golden Knights, even their regular season record at one game apiece in dramatic fashion. Pacioretty's first goal. How cool is that? We'll be talking about that. We've got some one-on-ones for you. Pretty darn cool. You can follow this show on Twitter. It's at Out of Line 1340 AM. And on Facebook, it's Out of Line. That's OUTTALINE. A ton of subjects available. And hey, if you want to call in and talk about one of them, the Fox Sports studio line is 702-876-1340.
Hi, this is Bubby, and it's time for What's on Tap.
Jose Valonte, what is on tap, brother?
What's going on, brother? What's on tap is brought to you by Bubba's University on South Hualapai between Tropicana and Flamingo. Always a great place to watch the games. Today, in just a few minutes, we're going to have Las Vegas Review-Journal's own Mark Anderson will be joining us today talking about the embarrassing debacle loss, the dumpster fire to New Mexico yesterday from UNLV. Not only that, we're also going to talk about the Vegas Golden Knights finally getting their first win in Minnesota. Not only that, Frank Harnish will be stopping by in studio, which is the best part, in my opinion, because if anybody can talk VGK, it's Frank Harnish, of course, from the VGK Insider Show. We're also going to have Alan Snell joining us to give us his LV Sports Biz Minute. Also, the baseball playoffs are in full swing, and it's week 5 of the NFL, and none of us have more than at least one loss. So if you're putting your money down, you might want to wait until after our picks of the week in this segment. Not only that, What's on Tap is brought to you by Bubby's University, where you can earn your degree in food, draft beer, gaming, and the hard stuff. The only major is a good time. Bring your Rebel ID and your first beer is free. You can enroll 24 hours a day. Yes, that means they never close. Bubby's University at 4570 South Hualapai between Tropicana and Flamingo. Go to bubbysuniversity.com for more information.
I know my guys are always fighting. I know we're always going to fight, but we just got to execute. I think we didn't execute very well, and I think we'll fix it.
Facts this. If you don't like the facts, take your ass back to bed. Fact this.
Yeah, it is a fact that UNLV lost at home yesterday afternoon in New Mexico by a score of 50-14. A week ago, that same Lobos team was beaten at home by Liberty 52-43. This game was the worst I have ever seen UNLV play. And to say it was embarrassing would probably be an understatement. I mean, they were outplayed, they were unprepared, and they were flat out outcoached. Joining me right now, Las Vegas Review-Journal beat writer Mark Anderson covers the UNLV beat for football and basketball, does a great job on that. Story tells it all if you check him out in the LVRJ today on the Rebel game. And Mark, I was trying to think all night last night how to put a positive spin on what we saw yesterday. Brother, I couldn't find a way to do it.
No, there was nothing positive to say about that game. It was about as embarrassing a loss as, well, it's probably the most embarrassing loss seeing students. And I think this is worse than Howard, because it's his fourth year. Howard was a complete surprise. Howard was a fluke in many ways. It was one of those nights everything that could go wrong did. In this game, they had 2 weeks to prepare. They had plenty of video on New Mexico. They knew what New Mexico was about. And in the fourth year, even with a backup quarterback, you can't be embarrassed like that. If they'd simply lost, it would have been bad enough. It would have been a bad loss. If they'd lost by like a touchdown or something or a field goal, but to get blown off the field at home by a team with a coach on his own hot seat, there's just no excuse for that.
I'll tell you, in watching that game right from the get-go, and Tony Sanchez did say it in the press box, he didn't pull any punches. I mean, they were lethargic right from the get-go. It was very difficult to watch. And right now, I was saying yesterday, half-heartedly joking, that the face of UNLV football is Hayes Hicken, the punter, might have the best opportunity to play on Sundays. I mean, the guy definitely knows how to turn the ball over. And on top of that, he picked up one of their, I don't know what they had. They ended up with, I think 13 first downs, and he got one of them, but only one in the first half. It was just ridiculous.
Yeah, and how many three and outs did they have? It was just, it was, and everyone was to blame. I mean, Gillum obviously didn't play well. His receivers really let him down. He dropped, Kylie Collins dropped a first down pass when the game was still competitive. But you never know. Maybe they get the momentum going their way if he catches that. And I think it was Mekhi Stevenson dropped a touchdown. The receivers just haven't been good all season. Defense, I thought played well early, kept UNLV in the game. I think they just got tired. I think it's a combination. They didn't play well, but I think they just also got tired. They were on the field a lot of snaps. And so it was just a really bad performance. And going forward, I don't know how they pull out of this. Utah State's I think Utah State's playing better than any team in the Mountain West right now. And next Saturday could be just flat out ugly. And then they come playing home to play Air Force. Air Force is looking better. I don't know where you find a win.
Mark, that's what I was going to ask you. I mean, it is very conceivable, looking at this schedule, that they do not win another game. I mean, I'm looking at games, maybe Hawaii, but, man, it's on the road. UNLV, it's a tough game to stay focused for. Maybe San Jose State, but, again, that game's on the road, and I think they're an improved team. Mark, what happens? Let's be honest here. What happens to Tony Sanchez if this team does not win another game and has two wins? I know, and I've said no matter what happens, he's going to be safe for one more season, but two wins? And a crowd of, I'm sorry, there was not 18,000 people in that stadium. They're talking about people that pre-purchased tickets. There might have been $8,000. But, Mark, what happens, man?
Well, if they only win two games, then that's still a big if. I mean, I think they're going to win more than two at some point. I just, right now, it's hard to envision it. But if let's say that scenario does play out, I don't know how he comes back. And I agreed. I thought all along he was getting a fifth year regardless. But you look at the they're not getting people in the stands at all. I don't know how you could recruit, if they only win two games. I don't know why players would choose to come here, seeing where the program is. So I think it would be Desiree would be forced into a major decision. The problem is that he's got his contract through the 2021 season. But if you're losing money as it is, that's a move you may have to make. But I think it's a little premature at this point to play it out that long because, I think Armani's probably going to come back at some point, and we saw what a difference him being out makes, and we'll see, right now I agree that it is hard to find another win on the schedule, but I do think even these horrible UNLV teams in the past, every once in a while they stumble into wins. So I don't think they're going to get shut out the rest of the season.
Mark, would you say that it's safe to say that he's throwing too much blame on the players and not taking enough responsibility on his own?
I thought he should have taken a little more responsibility yesterday. And in fact, I asked the first question in the news conference trying to get him to do that. He did do some. He did say it starts with the coaches. He did make that statement. But I thought he would be a little bit more forceful yesterday in saying that, you know, they didn't do good enough preparing the players. He did put it more on them, and maybe, you know, and certainly they are largely to blame. They are mostly to blame, but yeah, I think the ultimately it comes down to the coaches. They're the ones in charge of the ship.
Yeah, you know, Mark, and I asked Tony Sanchez the question yesterday. I mean, 3 weeks in a row with special team blunders on the receiving end of punts, you cannot have that 3 weeks in a row. That's got to be something that's fixed, especially after you just had an off week. And there's so many other things, but I think Tony Sanchez was just out of sorts after that game. I mean, what do you say? You're trying to maintain and keep your job. You're feeling an unbelievable amount of pressure. You know you just laid the biggest egg of your coaching career. You thought Howard was bad. As you said, Mark, I thought this one was more devastating and more damaging because now that stadium's going to be empty. I don't know how in a couple of years they are going to justify the cost of playing in an NFL stadium when you have crowds like that. That is a huge concern. But is Tony Sanchez out of his element? Is this just too big of a stage still at this point for Tony Sanchez?
I think he's done some good things. I think he's obviously with the Fertitta complex. That's something the previous coaches haven't been able to get done. Even John Robinson, I think, wanted something like that done, and he couldn't get it done. So, I think give him credit for that. I do think he's gotten generally better talent than the previous two coaches have had. I think they've had better depth. I think there are some things he's done. I think he's had a better staff. I think than previous coaches have had. He's done a good job of hiring assistants, guys with proven track records in college. But you know, I'm not really ready to give an overall evaluation until it plays out a little bit more. If they finish with 2 wins, I think you could definitely make that argument. But if they kind of rally here at the end and at least make a push toward bowl, then I know that's not realistic. But let's say they win another game or two and he comes back next year, it does just enough to come back next year, and the next year they do take the next step and get to a bowl, then I think that changes the view a little bit too. So I'm still trying to withhold judgment on that at this point.
Mark, my saying is, hey, if ifs and buts were candy and nuts, every day would be Christmas, right? I mean, the bottom line is we have got to see an improvement, and almost immediately. I mean, I thought other than the fake punt, very unimaginative play calling. Yeah, there were drop passes, and we have seen that all season. There are things you can make excuses for, but some of Max Gillum's passes were so bad that it wasn't even funny. At what point in time does Tony Sanchez maybe think, you know what, I don't know much about Kenyon Obal other than what he did at Liberty High School, which was pretty impressive, and I think with the local, you got a local guy sitting on your bench, it might create a little bit of interest. At what point do you say, man, let's give this kid a try? I know you might want to redshirt him, but at what point do you just say, you know what, let's throw caution to the wind and see what this kid can do when he's local?
Oh, I think it could be as early as next week. I understood. In fact, I was thinking the same thing that he actually said after the news conference yesterday, that about why he didn't play, because once the game got away, you know, and you still have a chance to possibly redshirt the guy, why put him in and use this as one of the 4 games when they're already out of it? Wait to see what happens after this game, and then don't worry about the redshirt. He has up to 4 games to play without using his redshirt. So they have a little bit of flexibility in that regard. So if they fall behind quickly to Utah State, which I would be surprised if they don't, then that might be the opportunity to throw him in there. Now they throw him against the Utah State team that's playing out of its mind right now, but still, I don't know what choice you have. I think at some point you just have to go with Oblad if Gillum doesn't suddenly turn it around. Now I know he played better in the second half, but the game was pretty much over by that point. So they have to take a serious look at Oblad.
Seriously, I mean, I think Armani Rogers could have done better with the boot than Gillum did with two good legs. And I'm sorry to say that, but that's just what I saw. He did seem to get a little bit more comfortable, a little bit more familiar. The game slowed down a bit in the mid-second half, but it was too little too late, and it was really hard to watch from a spectator standpoint. And Mark, I say all the time, when you see Dalton Baker leading this team in tackles, which he seems to do every week, that is a problem because he is your last line of defense. Granted, he's very active. He flies all over the field, and maybe not as great in coverage as he is in tackling and physicality, but you can't have your free safety leading your team in tackles. That's never a good thing, and 50 points is the result of that. We thought the defense got better. Mark, I don't know. Did it?
It's marginally better. You know, it's not a shutdown defense better. It's made an improvement, but it hasn't made a drastic improvement. It's I thought they played well early and were on the field for a lot of snaps, and I think that caught up to them, but I think they got quite good demoralized too, which we've seen from previous UNLV teams where once things start going south, they kind of, not that they give up, but maybe the effort isn't quite there, and I think you saw some of that. They're going to face an incredible test against Utah State, and Air Force will be another incredible test, and that's, you know, it could be an ugly few weeks coming up for them for sure.
We've got a break for a week before they're back here. As you said, they go to Utah State and then home for homecoming against Air Force. And I really hope they get it turned it around. I know that everyone here does as well. Tony Sanchez is a heck of a nice guy, and I'm not looking to dance on anybody's graves. But, you know, we're called out in the media for not telling it like it is. Hey, it's not about being a homer, man. You want to see him do well. But right now, I'm saying it stinks on ice, and I don't know how it gets better. They need to heat it up in a hurry. He is Mark Anderson of the Las Vegas Review-Journal, beat writer covering the UNLV beat for football and basketball. Mark, go ahead and let people know how they can follow you on Twitter.
You can get me at Mark Anderson 65.
Easy enough. Mark Anderson 65, and you see the check mark. He's got a lot of people following him for good reason. Mark, always appreciate you joining the show, and I know I get you up early on a Sunday. So again, my friend, I really appreciate it, man.
Thanks for having me on, Brian. You take care.
You too. Again, Mark Anderson, listen, we're going to go to break. We are going to come back from break, and we'll talk to, we'll talk a little bit Major League Baseball. We've got some Blazing coming up, and Alan Snell with the LV Sports Biz Minute. You won't want to miss that. This is Out of Line on Fox Sports Radio.
This is why I'm hot. This is why I'm hot. This is why
I'm hot because I'm fly. You ain't because you're not. Woo! Blazing brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, the 215 at North Durango in the Montecito Crossing Plaza. A short porch home run from Centennial Hills Hospital. Two happy hours every day, and we know it is America's favorite place for wings, beer, and sports. We are there every Monday night hosting their Monday night football party, another good one tomorrow night. Make sure you check it out. We give away wings parties. We give away team paraphernalia. We give away every now and again some T-shirts. I mean, it's a good time, man. Definitely come up there. Free wings all night long that I'm giving away. I'm walking around. If you're loud, you'll get some free wings. Coming up and see me. Jose's there. Magnum comes up, man. It's definitely a good time. Check it out. Buffalo Wild Wings, 215 in North Durango in the Montecito Crossing Plaza. And you know what's blazing? I was going to talk a little bit about the fight. I was hoping that would be my blazing, the UFC 229, the fight with Khabib, and of course Conor McGregor that's been highly anticipated. They say it's going to gross over $30 million after they add up all the pay-per-view money. And man, what a crappy way for that fight to end.
Horrible. Yep.
I mean, yeah, Khabib to go out in the stands after McGregor's people. I know the bus that did it last April still has him fired up. Mm-hmm. He definitely criticized his religion and a few other things as well, and that was a problem. But the bottom line is Khabib won the fight. Clearly, and submitted him with a rear chokehold mm-hmm. About 3 minutes to go in the fourth round. But this is something that is a huge problem. It's egg on the face of the USC, in my opinion. It's not creating excitement. Maybe it is among some fans, but it's not big-time wrestling. This is supposed to be the real thing. And I don't know, man. I'm kind of lost.
Look, it's pretty simple. This was extremely personal for Khabib.
It was.
Unbelievably personal, maybe more personable than any UFC fight we've ever seen, just because the fact that Conor is a disgrace when he holds nothing back when it comes to the trash talk. And let's be real, he got his ass kicked by Floyd, he got his ass kicked by Diaz the first time they fought. He's all mouth.
No.
And then he got completely dominated last night.
Last night he got dominated.
And it was great watching him tap.
But the fact that Khabib came out in the post press conference afterwards and is trying to blame and throw the blame on McGregor. You knew who McGregor was when you got into the UFC. You knew who he was before you fought him. Therefore, don't complain about it. If you look at it, Dana White was laughing at times, and he was more on Conor's side, because what Khabib did, in my opinion, is worse than anything that Conor's ever done.
No. Absolutely not. When you pick up a truck dolly and you throw it through the window
he already went through everything, it doesn't matter.
He still did it, though. I
agree with that. There is one reason that Dana White appeared to be defending Conor McGregor, and money. It is called dinero. It is all about flipping cash. That's the only reason.
But if you're Khabib, don't be a crybaby and come in there and try to blame it on him.
It's not being a crybaby.
You jumped over the gate by yourself and attacked someone.
He didn't blame it
on McGregor. He did. That's not McGregor's fault.
It is. Look,
how is that McGregor's fault?
When you throw a dolly through the window of a bus,
the fight was over.
And you scar other fighters. What's her name? Rose Namajunas?
I'm not saying what McGregor did at that time was right.
He could have killed somebody. Exactly.
I'm not saying what he did at that time was right. I'm talking about last night.
Okay, and then for
the UFC, to try to blame McGregor for what he did is wrong.
It was a carryover. That's what it was.
And for the UFC to turn around and then use that as promotional material
leading up to the fight.
Like Brian said, people could have been killed.
Absolutely.
It's absolutely disgraceful.
Absolutely.
Conor's like, if you did that, you'd be in jail.
I know. But I'm not saying that what he did when he threw that dolly was right.
I know what he did was wrong.
But I understand what you're saying.
Personal. That's why it happened.
You insult the guy's religion.
Yes.
It gets personal.
Yes.
When you bring religion into it, look, I'm not a religious guy. I don't really care what you say about how I was brought up religiously. But there are a lot of people
that take it very, very seriously.
There's people who kill each other over religion.
No doubt about it. No doubt about it. Listen, the bottom line is it was crap. It's a lousy way to end the fight. Khabib clearly won it. Again, he submitted him with a rear chokehold. Congratulations. I think he's going to get stripped of his belt.
Yes, I agree. Khabib did kick his ass. I don't know.
I do not know if he is going to get his paycheck. I mean, he'll get something. But right now, Dana White, they're withholding the $2 million purse he's supposed to get. I don't know if they'll get it.
McGregor got his money. Some of those guys may not be able to get back in the United States because they may be denied visas in the future.
No, absolutely. This is a huge problem, and it'll play out, and it'll create a rematch, and it'll create tons of money. But again, the reason McGregor was defended at all, if at all, by Dana White, and it sounded like that, it is about money. Look, McGregor's going to get $30 million, and Khabib's getting $2 million. It's ridiculous, and yet Khabib's 27-0. It's nuts, but it's all about money. I said if Khabib doesn't submit him, they'll find a way to give the decision to McGregor. It didn't come down to that because Khabib did submit him, so we'll leave it at that. Listen, the real blazing, what I wanted to say is Major League Baseball playoffs right now are blazing, and I'm enjoying the hell out of them. I really am. You know, for me with baseball, I mean, I'm honest. I watch opening day, I watch the All-Star game, and I watch the postseason. Unless the Tigers are making a run, then I may watch a few games here and there, but I get locked into the postseason, and my God, the New York Yankees, your Yankees again, they are entertaining the hell out of me. Last night again, Aaron Judge, a home run in all three games, stepping up, doing what he needs to. Gary Sanchez, two dingers last night. Great game for the Yankees, and not at that series at 1-1. I said nobody can beat Boston in a seven-game series. I didn't say they couldn't beat him in a five. I am kind of backing out of my statement there, but I'll tell you, I still think Boston's going to win this series, but I'm happy that New York made it interesting. And even though I'm a Detroit fan, and it's hard for me because those teams for years were in the American League East and major rivals of the Detroit Tigers, I still really enjoy a series between the Boston Red Sox and the New York Yankees. It's blazing, it's always exciting, and it makes for good stuff. Listen, Mags, we got Alan on the phone? Yeah, Alan Snell joining us with LVSportsBiz.com right now for the LV Sports Biz Minute. And Alan, I know we were going to talk about the article you wrote about Kerry Buchholz, which I thought was excellent. You also wrote one yesterday on Conor McGregor and about breaking pay-per-view records for that UFC 229 fight, which I thought was really good. And real quick, Alan, I'm going to give you the stage here for a minute, and I want you to talk about a book that I am really looking forward to reading that you wrote about a tragedy that you were in a motorcycle accident. And it's funny because Frank Harnish came in and is sitting to my right, and he can relate to that. And I've been in two car accidents in the last 3 weeks, so something that's near and dear. But being a good friend of mine and knowing what you went through in your road back, I can't wait to read this book.
Good morning, guys. I apologize if I come off a little groggy. I got to bed 3:15 this morning after covering the 229 event slash debacle at the end there. And, yeah, you covered a lot of ground there, Brian. Bubos and I had an interesting talk before the season opener, and I also reported a day after that UFC was looking to break their pay-per-view mark of 1.65 million from a couple of years ago. That included Conor McGregor. And I'm happy to say that the book that you referred to, Brian, is pretty much finished. I'm going to hopefully ship it to the publisher next week or this week, really. I received just last night a really beautifully written foreword from a close friend of mine who came to visit me while I was recuperating in March 2017 in Vero Beach, Florida. And just one clarification, I was actually on a bicycle, not a motorcycle.
Well, yeah, if I said a motorcycle, I apologize. Alan is a huge bicycling
advocate. Yeah, no problem. You know, it's funny, we talk about all these sports events and, you know, we cover it from different angles because we love the content. We love the way the fans interact. We love the way it moves people, not just watching great feats on the court, but at some level it's affecting us emotionally. But at the end of the day, I don't know how to be more brutally honest than this about the book, and that is it changed, you know, being hit by the car on a bicycle from behind. I was thankful to be alive. And number two, it changed my criteria for what happiness is, and that is simply being alive. And, you know, since that time, a lot of the things that normally would get under my skin, I just kind of let roll off. And I really enjoy and never take for granted bicycling through Red Rock Canyon, spending time with family or friends. And life has become more meaningful, and I hope that comes through in the book. It's called Long Road Back to Las Vegas. And don't get fooled by the stuff about the bicycling. And I include a lot of how covering the Vegas Golden Knights from the business side gave me an emotional anchor to move forward and to recover and heal. And it's not even really much about the Golden Knights. It's really about the passage and the journey of overcoming physical trauma, moving forward, finding purpose, finding affirmation.
The book is called Long Road Back to Vegas. As Alan said, it is completed. It'll be out soon. I'm looking forward to my autograph copy. And you know what? I'm going to talk Alan into giving my audience, somebody out there, an autograph copy as well. Should be pretty darn cool. He is Alan Snell, LVSportsBiz.com, over 100,000 subscribers strong and growing all the time. Definitely check it out. The business side of sports. A lot of great articles on the Golden Knights and anything happening in Vegas. Alan finds a spin to put in there, and I really enjoy it. Enjoy you, my friend, and thanks for coming on the show again.
Yeah, absolutely, guys. Have a great week.
Absolutely. Listen, we're going to come back. We got Frank Harnish on the other side talking Vegas Golden Knights. You'll hear from Pierre-Edouard Belmar. You'll also hear from John Merrill. And wow is all I can say about last night's game. Deja vu, man. We'll be right back.
It helped that at the end of the game, like, Malcolm Subban comes in and shuts them down, doesn't give up any more goals.
I don't know if it helped. I mean, you sure get a good glimpse and you're happy for him, but you're still losing the game. But I'm really proud of him to come back like this after it's always tough, and he made a few fantastic saves, and that's like I said, that's the shine of the game. We were not good enough in front of our goalie, and we paid a price too hard. Flower didn't deserve that. We have to be better, but Malcolm came in, and it's always tough to come in like this, and he stood up for us really well.
Just real quick, your goal, John, it was incredible. Real nice goal. I know it's not that meaningful since it didn't help you out.
Absolutely,
but
nothing. I really didn't have any comment on it. I mean, it's just, I think they were ahead, and they were trying to play a little bit more, you know, a little bit loose, and I got a pass. I got the puck, and then after that, I could feel that D was kind of stand still. I just tried to go around it, but like I said, at the end of the day, it didn't mean a single thing.
Hockey players, as you know, are warriors. They don't give up. They come to play every game.
It's time for Nightcap, a cup full of the Vegas Golden Knights. From highlights to interviews to special events, the puck starts here.
Yeah, the Vegas Golden Knights lost their home opener to the Philadelphia Flyers, who have kind of had their number. I mean, they play them well. There's three teams that play the Vegas Golden Knights, from what I saw last year, really well in the neutral zone, and that was the Philadelphia Flyers, the Washington Capitals, and, of course, the team they played last night, the Minnesota Wild, who were 3-0 in the inaugural season last year against the Vegas Golden Knights, one of the very few teams that had really good success. Joining us now, Frank Harnisch, of course. Every day you can hear him on Fox Sports Radio as he hosts the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show, and of course you hear the game, you hear him on the in between periods and on the post game intermission reports, and of course the post game with Ryan the Hockey Guy, Chris Magnum Chapman, a big part of that. Frank, last night was so refreshing because a lot of Vegas faithful that don't know hockey, no offense to them, man, they got acclimated last year, but I'm constantly hearing people talk, oh, no, oh, no. And it's like, my God, it was the same stuff we're hearing last year. We sit back knowing it was one game, fellas. And now they just exercised some demons last night. And it was a kind of a little reminder of what we saw last year. It was exciting, man.
Yeah, it was very exciting. And it's kind of interesting, too, because Gerard Gallant mentioned after the game, he said, you know, if we lose that game, it would have been a tough loss. But to the fan base, it would have been devastating. And this is a very tough road trip they have. So the comeback last night was very important because they have Buffalo coming up with an early game on Monday. It's a 12 noon game because it's Columbus Day. And Buffalo is young, but they're young. They have a lot of talent there. And they've improved their goaltending quite a bit, in my opinion, getting Carter Hutton from St. Louis. I think that's a big move for them. Then all you have is they get the two teams that won the Stanley Cup the last 3 years with Pittsburgh and Washington. And then you wrap it up in Philadelphia again, the team that just beat them at T-Mobile. And they do play them tough. So that's not they did not want to start off 0-2. Obviously, nobody does. But they kind of stole 2 points last night, and yet they outplayed them in the game. So did they really steal it, or did it finally just come to fruition what should have happened all the way along? However you look at it, the bottom line is Vegas gets off the snide. They get that win. Now they're 1-0. And I know Dan Duva mentioned it last night. They're actually better on the road than they are at home this year.
Well, I agree. You know, it's funny because, like you said, I think it was just a matter of time. It's getting pucks on the net. That's the key in hockey. It's not like basketball where you want to take high percentage shots. In hockey, you want to take shots. And the Golden Knights were taking shots. And it was great to see Bacioretty get his first goal, 5-hole, late in the game. I think 1:31 with the goalie pulled. That is Vegas Knights-esque. And we saw it again last night. I really enjoyed that. The shootout, Howley gets the goal. And what great confidence for Fleury after game one getting pulled in the second. And I told Mags, we were sitting next to each other at the game, I said after the fifth goal was scored, they need to pull Marc-Andre Fleury. You get a 4-goal lead at that point in the game. It's not anything against Fleury. It's not about his play. It's just a courtesy thing you see in hockey. Get that guy out of there because he's lost focus now. Put someone else in like Subban. So I liked all of that. But what a huge game for Fleury last night for them to come back and win that way.
Yeah, and also with Fleury giving up the goal early on in the first period, and it was a shot that I don't think he saw because he kind of went one way, the shot went the other way. He was screened a little bit by it, and even that shot, it hits the crossbar. It hits the crossbar a quarter of an inch different, and all of a sudden it goes out, and it's not even a shot on goal technically, but instead it hits it bar low, it goes in, and you're wondering, is just one of these nights when they're going to run into a super hot goaltender and they're not going to get the job done? But Fleury, he wasn't tested often, but he was sensational when he had to be up to that point for the rest of the game. And then, of course, Pacioretty gets that. The guy that I really felt good for last night was Paul Stastny, mm-hmm. because I don't know if he would have slipped very well if they would not have won that game, because he was having a sensational game. He had scoring opportunities. He had one point blank with a wide open net, but the puck was bouncing on him and he just completely fanned on it. So, it's sometimes that goes that way. He shot a couple pucks that were wide. He had a good game, but he couldn't get it past. And Dubnyk was kind of playing out of his mind. But Devan Dubnyk likes to give up rebounds. Well, he doesn't like to, but he does give up rebounds. No goalie likes to give up rebounds. But Vegas just wasn't quite in the right position to bang one home. And then Pacioretty finally gets it late. And then Eric Haller, the kid from Minnesota, he went to high school there. He played college hockey there. He was with the Minnesota Wild. And for him to get that goal in the game winner was just absolutely, it was almost like magical. And again, like you said, it's pretty much like, yeah, this is what we saw last year, and now the entire city can breathe. And I know you guys were talking about the UFC event last night. I had some friends that were at a Buffalo Wild Wings, and I know you do stuff with them, and they were watching the fights over there, and they said once Pacioretty scored that goal, everybody quit watching the UFC, and the place absolutely erupted. So even with the UFC pay-per-view, one of the biggest events that they've ever had in fights here in the fight capital of the world, everybody was still focusing on the Golden Knights.
That is so absolutely cool to hear. And, you know, bringing up Pacioretty and, of course, Paul Stastny, you know, I've had a lot of discussions when they first came over, Frank, as I'm sure you have too. Similar discussions that I had last year when they got Ryan Reeves and Tatar, and everyone was like, oh, my God, it's going to disrupt the chemistry. I'm like, people, do you know how good Max Pacioretty is before you have any comment? Do you understand hockey? This guy, among even strength goal scorers over the last six seasons, only trails Alexander Ovechkin and John Tavares. I mean, does it get any better than that? And Paul Stastny, watch him take draws. You need guys that can win draws. He's one of the best in the NHL at doing it. People, I understand you're sad, you know, James Neal on, Ron's on, Tatar we only picked up for a short period of time. Trust me, this is a major improvement. Frank, will you please let people know it's a major improvement?
Well, if you don't know about the Stastny family, just look up his father and his uncles, because I think he was born with a hockey stick in his hand when he came out. I mean, this guy knows hockey. They have chemistry because they've played on Team USA together. And if Paul Stastny doesn't come here, Max Pacioretty probably doesn't come to Vegas. He came right out and said when Stastny signed here, and then because of his relationship with Gerard Gallant, those were kind of the deciding factors to have him come here. And this was a guy who was the captain of the Montreal Canadiens when he was in Montreal. And
for 30 goal seasons in a row.
But for a guy that doesn't speak French to be captain in Montreal, right? That says a lot, because, you know, that media up there, they can be absolutely vicious, but they love Max Pacioretty. And you mentioned the stuff. It's not only what they do on the ice, and especially in Pacioretty's case. This is a guy that's going to be out in the community. He's going to be out with his family. He can be a face of a franchise that already has some faces out there, quite a few of them. The biggest face is the one, ironically enough, that's behind a mask in Marc-Andre Fleury. But Pacioretty is a quality hockey player and probably even a bigger quality person.
He even said last night after the game, and we got the tape on that, he talked about a chip on the shoulder of this team. And he says, and there's a chip on my shoulder as well. Maybe the chip is how bad Montreal's been. He was their leading point getter for six seasons in a row. I mean, he's as good as it gets. And this was Max after the game last night.
This is a tight group. Tightest I've seen. I mean, everyone knows that they had a chip on their shoulder last year and they stuck together. And that's why they made, you know, so far last year. But they have that same attitude this year. Chip's still there. Chip's on the new guy's shoulder. Everyone's on board and in this together. And you see what happens when, you know, guys play for one another.
I mean, I love the guy already. I'm a gigantic fan, Frank. What do you think? Isn't it? I mean, it's just really cool. Like you said, this guy is going to help on and off the ice because he immediately commands respect from his fellow teammates.
I was excited when they first got Pacioretty, but the first time we met him over at City National Arena and he talked to the media and we got to do one-on-ones, Ryan and I got to talk to him right away, I was impressed even that much more. I mean, this guy is one of those guys like Jonathan Marchessault who will take the team on his back, who's not afraid to talk to the media, who relishes the challenge, who will take responsibility. In Montreal, it was ownership that basically has destroyed that team with stupid moves like the PK Subban for Shea Weber. And that's not saying Weber's not a good hockey player, but that was a stupid move that they did. And they've done several moves like that. And yet he still took culpability and said, yes, as the captain, it's on me. And it wasn't necessarily on him. Yes, it's on every one of the players out there. But when you're constantly going against a management that doesn't know what the heck they're doing, it's hard to win and be consistent. But he always had a smile on his face. He never turned down a media interview. He never shied away from things. And he still took responsibility even when it wasn't necessarily his to take. For him to be on a team like this and in that locker room, there's a bunch of leaders in that locker room. They now have another huge leader.
Oh, no question. There's an old saying, too many Chiefs and not enough Indians. It doesn't apply to the Vegas Golden Knights because the Chiefs all work together. That's what makes this team unique. They work together. They truly like each other. I know that it's an overstatement. You always hear this, a family environment. But if I've ever seen one in all my years of covering sports, the Vegas Golden Knights have that family environment. It all starts with the Turk up front, Gerard Gallant, who embraces the players, always has the right right thing to say to the media. A man, a few words, but it's like E.F. Hutton, man. When Gerard Gallant speaks, we listen, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why after the first game when Gerard Gallant spoke, it spoke volumes. When he was asked after the game what they took positive out of that game, and he said nothing. That spoke volumes, because that is the biggest negative statement that we have seen Turk say since he's been here in Las Vegas. When he says a statement like that, the entire team can hear. And you mentioned the old thing of too many Chiefs and not enough Indians. If all the Chiefs are also Warriors, then you're still going to be a winner.
They're fighting, that's for damn sure. And I'll tell you what, no offense to you, Tony Sanchez, but you ought to come to a Vegas Golden Knights press conference and watch Gerard Gallant answer questions. Take full accountability. Don't put it on your players. Put it on yourself. That's what you got to do as a coach. I don't care if your ass is on the line or not. And Gerard Gallant always does that. A stand-up guy, somebody that commands respect, and I give him the utmost of it. Not just what he did last year, him as a human being, as a former hockey player and as a coach right now in the National Hockey League. Absolutely. Love the guy. He's Frank Harnish. Again, you can hear him every day right here on Fox Sports Radio. Chris Chapman's behind the board, and of course sitting next to Ryan the Hockey Guy. Some great stuff. These guys know hockey as well as anybody in Las Vegas, and don't be embarrassed if you don't know it that well. Most people didn't in this part of the country till last year. Listen to the show, man, every day, and they'll pick it up.
You know, you mentioned that, and I want to throw it. We were talking about Max Pacioretty, and he said something last week before this road trip that I thought was one of the most profound things I've heard in a long time here in Vegas. When he was asked about the October 1st event and things going on, he mentioned to us in the media that, you know, yeah, I was around here, but I was in Montreal then, and I talked to players from other teams. And he said Vegas is a unique situation with their fan base, and the people in the media were kind of like, well, yeah, right, it's a very rabid fan base. He goes, yeah, but lots of teams have rabid fan bases. What's different about Vegas is this city fell in love with the Vegas Golden Knights before they fell in love with hockey. A lot of these people still don't know hockey. They're still learning hockey. And I thought that was kind of interesting, and it is a unique situation. Most fan bases in hockey love the game of hockey, and whatever city they're in, they gravitate towards that team. Or if they're in a city that doesn't have a team, they gravitate towards the jersey or who their father liked or whoever, whatever the situation is. There's still people out here that don't know what they're really watching. They kind of know what an offside is now, but they're not 100% sure. Was it a tripping or a hook or something else? They're not sure, but they know there was a penalty called. But regardless of whether they know this game or not, they love the Vegas Golden Knights for what they did and meant to this community, this city, and everything else. And Pacioretty said that's kind of what he wanted to be a part of, and he's right. It's a very interesting and unique situation, because I can't think of any of the other 30 teams in the United States where that is the case. Those fan bases love hockey and love their team. Out here, the people love their team, and they're starting to learn how to love hockey.
It's crazy, but that is a really excellent observation, because it's absolutely the truth. Frank, finishing up, first of all, give everyone so they can follow you on social media, man.
VGK Frank, and you might want to follow Ryan the Hockey Guy as well, because he tweets a lot more than I do, because he's a little bit younger, and he's into that kind of stuff. I'll do it here and there. Chris also likes to retweet our stuff out there, but always love covering the Golden Knights. You know, for an old guy, I'm trying to get a little bit better at it, but, you know, I got carpal tunnel, man.
Frank, I'm right there with you. This social media crap, I tell my dad, you know, when I was graduating from Michigan State, I graduated one back then. It was trimesters before computer classes were required. And I'm like, my dad's like, what would that matter? The computers back then weighed 600 pounds, and they did and looked nothing like the computers of today. It wouldn't have helped me. But Frank, the Vegas Golden Knights, and I thought it was a tad unfair, they started at home and then five straight road games, and as we talked about, pretty formidable foes that they're going up against. It starts again back on the road tomorrow afternoon in a rare Monday afternoon game at noon against the Buffalo Sabres, and then, of course, they go to the reigning Stanley Cup champion, Washington Capitals, the Penguins after that, then the Flyers, and then they come home to play the Sabres Tuesday the 16th. How crucial is it to, say, split this road trip, maybe get 3-2, or at worst case scenario, 2-3, and they're off to a good start?
I think crucial is a little bit of an overstatement at this point in the season. It's early on in the season. For the fan base, because, again, the sky is falling anytime Vegas loses a game. But in reality, they know that they don't have Nate Schmidt. Another thing that people aren't talking about, I don't think enough, without Alex Tuch and Cody Eakin, they're playing with a diminished crew right off the start of the season here. The win last night was great. If they win another game on this road trip, that'll be, you know, 2-3. that's not the end of the world type scenario. Obviously, you'd like to win every single game out there. I'm curious to see. I think the Washington game is going to be a huge game because it's a rematch of the Stanley Cup champions. I know everyone's going to want to see that. I'm curious to see what happens in Pittsburgh because Pittsburgh got it handed to them last night by the Montreal Canadiens, who are not a very good team. So Pittsburgh seems to be off to a bit of a rough start. And I know that they want to get revenge with Philadelphia, and they want to win that game on Saturday. They want to split this season series because they're done with the Flyers for the season after next Saturday.
Frank, I have a question for you. There's a lot of people out there in Vegas that are still like, it's just hockey. I don't really care about hockey. But you just said stuff about what Matt Pacioretty said. And what do you tell people that haven't been to a hockey game yet or haven't even been to a Golden Knights game? Not even a hockey game. Just a Golden Knights game. The atmosphere, everything that is there. What do you tell those type of people that say, it's just hockey?
You know, I understand it, and I know a lot of people tell me, it's like, well, it's a regular season game. Why do you care? There's the playoffs and all this and that. If you have not been to a hockey game and you get the opportunity to go, and I know that tickets are a little bit pricey and things like that, go down there, check out a game. If you are not sold on the NHL in a hockey game, when you see it live with the speed, the power, the checking, the slap shots and everything else, then maybe it's not your cup of tea. For me, it's the most exciting game out there. People love the NFL, and NFL is king. And I'm not going to say anything bad about it because I love football as well. But for every 5-second play, you have 35 seconds of nothing going on. In hockey, you can have 5 or 6 straight minutes of nonstop action back and forth, and especially if it goes to overtime with 3-on-3 and everything. To me, hockey is the most exciting sport on the planet, and it's been that way since many years ago when I was in high school and saw my first game at the old Chicago Stadium with the Blackhawks and the Colorado Avalanche way back in the day. So it's a great sport. I love the sport. See it live if you get the opportunity. And even if you can't get into T-Mobile, head on down to the park. Watch it on the big screen outside. Watch the people waving their flags. Go to City National Arena and check out one of the skates. Go to some of these events and meet some of the players and find out that they are approachable. They're not like the NFL or the NBA where you have to look over somebody and they have an entourage of security guards around them. They will come up. They will take a selfie with you. They'll sign an autograph. They'll say hi. They'll shake your hand or whatever. These are guys are down-to-earth, real people who just happen to be incredible athletes.
He is Frank Harnish, host of the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show, 2 to 3 o'clock every weekday here on Fox Sports Radio. You can also hear Frank all over Vegas Golden Knights Radio. And the Vegas Golden Knights get ready again. They play tomorrow. Real excited about that. Hopefully they'll continue their winning ways. And one last thing I'll say about this, Frank, as I let you go. I heard a caller on the postgame show Friday night saying clearly what they're missing. Nate Schmidt was clearly the best defensive player on the team. Learn a little bit more about the game. Nate Schmidt is a great player, very solid defensively. If I have to take between Nate Schmidt and Shea Theodore, I'm probably taking Shea Theodore based on his age and the upside. And this kid offensively looks ridiculous. But again, I'm not thwarting Nate Schmidt. I'm just saying I wouldn't say he is clearly the best player, defensive player on the Vegas Golden Knights.
Well, he logs the most minutes right now, so I think Turk thinks he's the most reliable defenseman at this point. But for potential-wise and everything else, there's a reason that they signed Theodore to 7 years.
No question about it. Listen, we got to wrap that up. We've got to go over to the NFL, Mags, real quick. Our picks for the NFL, and I want to thank Frank. Thanks again for joining the show. And if you got a pick, you can give it. Right now, we are killing it. I'm 3-1. Jose's 3-0-1. Magnum 3-1, and Caleb Herring.
So then you gave me 3, not 3.5.
Huh?
Because I texted Caleb yesterday last week.
I gave you the it's always the review journal.
Okay,
line.
That's fine.
Review
so I got to push. I'm good.
You got to push.
I haven't lost yet.
You haven't lost. And of course, Caleb Herring gave me the Saints today, and that's his pick. So we'll mark them down. You got Frank. Go ahead. Give us a guest pick, man. Who do you got in the NFL?
I have not even looked at a line because we ran a hockey game last night at Lindo Michoacan. I have a game tomorrow at 11:30 with a pregame show. So my pick is that the Bears are definitely not going to lose this week, and they will remain in first place because it's their bye week.
I will give you that. I was going to give you the Bears anyways. Max, what do you got for me?
I'm going to go with the Chiefs. No Leonard Fournette for Jacksonville. I still don't have confidence about Blake Bortles. They're going on the road to KC. KC's playing really, really good football. Pat Mahomes on fire. He's got 16 touchdowns, no interceptions, something like that. That may change a little bit today because the Jaguars are a pretty good defense, but I just don't trust Blake Bortles or Jacksonville without Leonard Fournette.
Interesting. Okay. And Jose, what do you got?
So I wasn't going to do Kansas City, but I took Kansas City on the other show. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to take Cleveland. I think Baker Mayfield gets his first win as a starter today. They're at home. I know Baltimore's playing great. They're playing lights out. Like Eric Weddle said, we're not the same old Ravens. But you know what? They're at home. They're getting 3 points. Give me the three. Baker Mayfield comes out on top with Cleveland.
I'm going to go with the Houston Texans, the Battle of Texas, the Houston Texans and the Dallas Cowboys. I think two pretty lousy teams in the National Football League, but Houston just has this upside. Their defense has to start playing better. I think Deshaun Watson, I don't think I'm going to say he's the most underrated quarterback in the league. I think the guy is as solid as can be, and if you've got him on your fantasy team, you're pretty happy. But I just think we'll see more productivity out of the offense, a better defense, and man, Dak Prescott, I mean, last week was his best game against the Lions, and he still looked lousy. He's not the quarterback we saw 2 years ago, man.
It's the Lions.
It's the Lions. You gotta pound them at home. I'm sorry. So I'll take the Houston Texans. Listen, this is Out of Line. I want to thank everyone for joining the show. Mark Anderson, Frank Harnish for stopping by. Of course, Alan Snell, LVSportsBiz.com. The interviews of people that helped us out there. Everyone, of course, producer Chris Magnum Chapman, Jose Belonte. Check out his show Thursday night on the station Up the Dial called Sudden Death. That's 8 to 9 o'clock. You'll find it, like I said, a little bit Up the Dial. I'm Brian Feldman. This is Out of Line. Back next Sunday every week, 8 to 9 a.m. Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 a.m., home of the reigning Western Conference champion, Vegas Golden Knights. We'll see you next week.